Hey everybody, it's the Shay Anything Podcast, a hot stove edition once again. Doug Williams alongside Andy Martino. Please subscribe, rate, and review if you haven't already. We're happy to be with you. Andy's had a lot of reporting and a lot going on in the past 2 weeks. Mainly, really, the last week was the beginning of the Cano. Mets are being aggressive on Cano, which escalated. Obviously, now that happened. Robinson Cano is a Met. Yesterday, he had some news about JT Realmuto. Similar, correct me if I'm wrong, to your first story about Cano, that like, okay, the Mets are actually on this.
Yes, and in fact, the Realmuto thing, I felt stronger about it, like, by the hour. Like, at first, it was like I was able to report that they were somehow, to some extent, still engaged in Realmuto. And the more I kept hearing, the more I'm like, yo, this is real. So, now, there are going to be a lot more competition from other teams to trade for JT Realmuto, the best catcher in baseball, than there were for Robinson Cano, obviously. So this isn't going to be just a matter of like the two teams talking. I'll bet you the Marlins are engaged with as many as 10 teams or more. So there's, in terms of this actually coming to completion, I would say that there are those obstacles for the Mets, but they really like Realmuto, and they will move a lot of things around to make a fit because they think he's a special player.
When you first tweeted that the Mets were interested, the most common tweet to you from fans, I believe, was, well, too bad they don't have any prospects to trade.
Are you up in my mentions?
Your response was, they have Amed Rosario. And that's kind of been the story ever since. Do they build a package around Amed Rosario? Do they build a package around Conforto? Would that be enough? What I'm curious about is, isn't Amed Rosario like a very good get if you're the Marlins? Because not only is he coming off being one of the top prospects in baseball, but he already has 1 year of big league experience under his belt.
Yes, definitely. If I'm the Marlins, I'd rather have him than Conforto because of their window. Conforto, I believe, has 3 more years. That doesn't really help the Marlins, just like Syndergaard doesn't really help them. I don't know what would help them. I don't know what that team is doing or how they would ever be good again. But I guess years of control would be what they should go for. Look, the Mets would prefer not to trade Rosario, not because they love Rosario necessarily as much as the lack of depth at shortstop organizationally. What would be really cool is if they traded Rosario for Realmuto and signed Manny Machado. I refreshed my understanding today. They are not expecting to be in on Manny Machado. So that dream scenario for Mets fans doesn't look like it's going to happen. It'd be more likely to trade Nimmo or Conforto, and realistically, I don't think Nimmo gets you Realmuto, and add prospects to one of those players, and then sign A.J. Pollock, who they're interested in.
Yeah, all of these moves with Realmuto come with, like, contingency plans. I don't know if that's team-driven or actually sourced, or if it's just us. Like, so...
What do you mean?
Do you get the sense that, let's say the Mets do acquire JT Realmuto for Conforto and prospects, meaning they have an opening in the outfield. Do you have sourced information that says that would make A.J. Pollock more realistic?
Yes.
Like, so are they in their meeting saying, yeah, we're only interested in Pollock if we have to trade one of those two guys?
I wouldn't say that, but you do get to a certain place. Their payroll's already pretty high for where they've normally been. Subtracting and adding at the same time is probably more likely than just continuing to add. Pollock's a player that they like. If they have a vacancy in the outfield, it becomes that much more appealing. How this proceeds linearly, they don't necessarily control. If A.J. Pollock's agent, Casey Close, who, by the way, split from CAA and Brody Van Wagenen, and these dynamics are fascinating. Not a good relationship between Close and the CAA guys. Anyway, that wouldn't prevent them from doing business with each other. But if Casey Close has a deal for Pollock with some other team that and Brody doesn't have a deal yet for Realmuto, then the Mets have to figure out in what sequence to do things. But that all remains to be seen. But what I'm telling you is they really like Realmuto. They know they have to trade off the big league roster to get him, and they really like A.J. Pollock. Those are the things that are true.
I know that you just said, which is certainly news, that they're not, as of right now, expected to be players in the Manny Machado sweepstakes. Are you surprised, as of now, the way the offseason's gone and the amount of actually intelligent conversation you can have connecting the Mets to Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, whether neither happens or not, that this is actually something that is in the realm of possibility this offseason.
I don't think so. In the barest sense, maybe Bryce, like slimmest sense, Bryce Harper, I don't see their splash including one of those two guys.
Do you think that is because of the players? Do you think that's because of the price tag, the years? Or do you think that Brody just prefers to get it done with smaller pieces?
I think that a $350 million contract would be well over double what the organization has ever done. So although they're being very aggressive right now, that may be a bridge too far for what they can stomach.
So let's kind of use yesterday's presser to move forward with this conversation, because every time you hear Brody speak, I think you learn a little bit more about the guy, what he'll be like as a general manager, how he could navigate things moving forward. And I was watching you and Gary Apple yesterday morning, and right after...
Always nice to see Gary Apple.
Always nice to see Gary. Right after Cano spoke, Cano kind of gave away this little tidbit that you found fascinating, which was he said, Brody told me, you know, he had more moves to make, basically. I'm paraphrasing. That, to me, is fascinating.
You know what else is fascinating? When Mickey Callaway said, Cano's arms, his hands, those are not natural. Anyway, moving on.
I actually missed that, but that is that's
funny.
Something.
It was a quote.
That, to me, is interesting for a GM, and I'm curious, you have dealt with, talked to, asked questions to a lot of GMs before, to promise a player, hey, waive your no-trade clause to come here. Not like he wouldn't have if he hadn't heard it, but waive your no-trade clause to come here. I still have a lot more work to do. The guys that are your teammates now may not be come spring training, and that's why you should come here. Is that a rare thing for a GM to promise?
That's a great question. I would say that... anything you have to say to convince a guy to waive his no-trade clause, you're going to try to meet that if that's someone you want, generally. But Brody is a particularly player-friendly GM for the obvious reason that not only did he spend his whole life on the player side until last month as an agent, but he was a player at a fairly high level. If you're playing at Stanford, where Ruben Amaro played, he wasn't just like a little league catcher like I was,
like a high school
or a high
pitcher,
school pitcher like he was. He's a real ball player up until he was like 20, 21. So he really understands the player mentality and I think is more willing, even as an agent, he was this guy. I remember Ryan Zimmerman, one of his clients, saying that Brody would like get on a plane for the day and fly to his charity event when he was doing something else and he didn't have to. And he's always been that guy that was like super into communicating with the players. So I think that's a good pickup that he would share that, that there's some. It is something uniquely Brody that maybe he would. I bet when they had dinner, he was real buddy-buddy with Cano and Diaz, and he didn't hold much back and trusted them with that information.
But to say that there are plenty of moves to come, if a lot of them are trades, is a risky proposition.
Because
you
don't know what's going to happen.
You don't know. You know, A.J. Pollock, if adding him is totally dependent on trading Nimmo or Conforto, like, how does Brody know that technically the rest of the offseason won't be quiet?
He calls it parallel paths, or parallel tracks, whatever, which of the two is a phrase I've picked up in his rhetoric.
Buzzwords.
Yeah, and obviously what that means is that if the real moves, if it's finally like the Marlins are like, Conforto or don't talk to me, and the Mets are like, you know what, no, then you pivot immediately to something else, one of those other parallel tracks, whether it's Wilson Ramos or Martin Maldonado and move it a different move on a different David Robertson, Andrew Miller, spend your resources elsewhere. Stuff's going to happen.
Do you think that is all? I don't know. So does a GM at this point, and I'm asking you a lot of questions that I just don't know the answers to. You should
not
feel.
That's because you have an inquisitive mind.
Yeah. So I'm just curious if, like, does Brody already have the go ahead to sign Yasmani Grandal if down the line, that ends up being his best option, and Rael Muto. Like, basically what I'm just wondering is, does he know for a fact that he will solve certain positions, areas of need by the end of the offseason, or is he going to have to figure it out as he goes?
That's another good question, Doug. My understanding is that they are just trying to get themselves to a projected low 90s win team, or more, but realistically, and however they can do that. What they say, well, one way we can do that is to significantly upgrade a catcher. Another way we can do that is to get two or three relievers. Another way, you know, so I think that to your question, it's not that specific. It's more about, like, here are all the ways we can upgrade. Let's see what actually lands.
What I'm curious about with Real Muto specifically is how he's viewed. I don't necessarily know how to view him. When I hear his name, I don't think that is the pillar of a franchise type of player. He's got a career OPS lower than 800. However, is he viewed as the best catcher in baseball? Because he's certainly trending that direction. But, I mean, how significant do teams view that at a position that, as we just saw in the playoffs, if you fill it with a solid defensive backstop, you can fill it. So,
good point.
How do teams view JT Realmuto? He's the best player at a position that doesn't have a lot of great players.
Yeah, but you could look at that a couple different ways. Like, yeah, you can get away with being in the postseason with a bat with Eric Kratz as your catcher. Wouldn't you rather have the best catcher in baseball? Doesn't that make you better? I think it all goes into different ways to get better.
Yeah.
And I know that Brody's not only going to pursue his former CAA clients, but I think that he believes that Realmuto is a special player, and Brody personally has that belief.
Yeah, I don't know whether to feel like he's got the in with all of these guys and thinks they're great because he used to be, you know, his their representation, or if he just represented some great players. So,
well, it's a bit of a chicken and egg thing, but that's also his thing with Cano. He knows him. He likes him. And I think that helped to motivate why he thought that a 36-year-old player could still be good for a little bit.
What else important happened yesterday from the presser? If you can think back to what already feels like a long time ago.
Lots happened since.
But it was, in my opinion, my takeaway from that was I felt like I learned more than I expected to going in. Like, those press conferences a lot of times are awkwardly long pauses for jerseys to be put on and hats to be put on for some reason.
There was that.
Then there was that. That was included. Then there's, you know, yeah, I'm excited to be here. To be a part of this franchise is a dream. There was that too. What there also was, in my opinion, was the reaffirmation that Brody Van Wagenen has this obsession with changing the narrative with this team and making them good in 2019.
Yeah. Well, to the first point, I remember when Edwin Diaz was on like his sixth button, I turned to Gary Appel and said, this is really riveting television.
It always takes so long. I mean, putting on a baseball jersey takes a weirdly long time.
It's a still photo opportunity, and it happens to be broadcast.
That's true. We all see the photos.
Yes, he is. You're right. We learn more. I guess the public learned more. As a reporter, I would say it probably confirmed my job is to have an understanding of where they're going with things anyway. But if you're just watching Van Wagenen, I thought that the most interesting and valuable point that he made in his little speech at the beginning was about how words alone don't define an organization, actions do. And we talked about this already last night on BNNY, but the introductory press conference was so short on specifics. You're like, is this guy blowing smoke, or is he, you know, like, what his ideas are, really, you know, baseball ideas? And now we know that he's going to take action to back up those words. And people are like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I think that fans seem to keep swinging back and forth because most people seem to love hearing him. How could you not love your GM getting up there and being, we are going to be relevant, we are going to try? Brody told me recently in a conversation, he may have said this publicly after or not, he said, no New York sports team should ever be irrelevant. And he wants that news cycle, and not for the sake of itself.
It's great for us.
He wants to win. Oh, it's great. He's great business for us, although bad for rest and sleep and whatnot. But yes, good for us. And hearing him, he had the chance to articulate that to fans, and that was definitely a big thing.
How about the fact that a week of shows was the GM meetings, and you asked him several questions like, are you in on Manny Machado? And basically, his answers were, in terms of trading his own guys or signing guys in the free agent market, we're open to anything. And I think when you heard that, when I heard that, when a lot of fans out there heard that, they were like, okay, yeah, like, whatever. Those are the generalities that members of front offices use, because they don't want to pigeonhole themselves. They don't want to say, no, we're not trading Michael Conforto when a great offer could come in.
Right.
So when I heard Brody talk like that, yeah, we could sign whoever. We could trade whoever. I was like, lip service. That clearly is actually what he meant, which in hindsight makes listening to him really important.
More valuable. That's a great point. He's proven that his words will result in some kind of follow through with actual action.
Right.
Meaning his words actually matter. And that's a great point.
So do you now listen to him with that scope, thinking any actual detail you can get out of him is probably more researched, more based in his own findings and fact than maybe a normal cliche-driven interview?
I think that he will continue to hammer these themes that he has. He's going to be short on specifics because he has a belief from the player side that we shouldn't get too into it. Like, for example, when he's negotiating with DeGrom, we're not going to hear a word about that because he doesn't think that these things should be updated to the media, the public. So he's going to definitely have his limits on specificity. But I guess to your point, he's not just blowing smoke. And I haven't known him to be yet someone who strays from the truth. He may be general. He may be not willing to go certain places. But I haven't been like, you said that, then you did something totally different. That hasn't happened yet. So, yeah, I think his words do carry some weight so far.
What do you think is – how have your – I'm going to go to my third way of propping this question up. Has your reporting changed on the likelihood of Noah Syndergaard being traded since the Robinson Cano trade became official?
No. I still think it's something they're open to and not committed to.
So you don't think they've... Do you think they haven't gotten an offer that they love yet?
That's exactly right.
And Patrick Corbin making $140 million.
That could help. That could help get that offer, for sure. If you're a team, there's a lot... that now there's Eovaldi, Happ, and then there's a drop-off. Lance Lynn being in that same list is...
Yeah, he's on those full screens.
Yeah, right. You know? And he's pitching out of the bullpen in the playoffs, doing well, but still, not even a playoff rotation with the Yankees. So,
The Indians holding on to all their guys at this point.
Yeah, I think that could change. I bet you the Indians trade one of those guys. So there's a lot of starting pitching options, and teams are sifting through what's possible. And a lot of teams obviously want starting pitching. Sonny Gray is going to fill one of those holes pretty soon when there's Brewers, Padres, the Reds. These are all teams that are talking to the Yankees about Sonny Gray. So there's a lot of options that teams still have. And I think with the Mets, it's like, let's wait and see. Let's just wait and see.
Right.
Maybe someone steps up when their other thing falls through.
And looking ahead to the winter meetings next week, you'll be in Vegas, correct?
I will.
So what I...
Along with Steve Gelbs, Jim Duquette.
Yep, you will have a good crew doing Mets Hot Stove shows from over there. So why should we be or should we not be looking for a flurry of moves from Brody at the winter meetings? Because, you know, texting works, phones work, you know, we all have them on us at all times. So why is it that in the winter meetings we have to be on hyper alert about trades happening?
Well, it's not winter meeting specific because... Damn it, I've been on high alert for weeks.
Yeah, that's true. I've got my Twitter alerts on all the time now.
It's exhausting. Last night, I wanted to watch a show with my wife, and I left my phone upstairs. And after like 45 minutes, I was like, I got to go get it. I don't know what the hell could be going on.
It's like burning a hole in your brain. It's like, oh.
Which is, you know, no way to live.
No, but, but it won't be like that. It won't be like that forever.
Have you met this guy? I know you have.
What trades could he possibly make the first month of the season?
This guy's crazy, man. Who knows? Mickey Callaway for Terry Francona.
I mean, I'm looking ahead to the winter meetings almost less excited than I normally am.
What's your normal excitement, 1 to 10?
Because I'm not here late anymore, because BNNY is
spiked up
weeknights. It's spiked up because I can sit at home and watch SNY and MLB Network and really get as much information as I can. Mm-hmm. And there have been years where tons of trades have highlighted the meetings. There have been years where it's been kind of slow. I just am less excited because I feel like Brody doesn't care where he is. Vegas or Queens, like, he'll make the deal.
I think, yeah, that's true. But there's active things, Syndergaard, Realmuto, that will winter meetings always brings that stuff to a head quicker.
Well, so that's what I'm wondering. Yeah. Like, why?
Because
you're in.
Why generally do the winter meetings have this effect?
Yes.
Because it's manufactured, but it still has the result of they're in the same hotel, the teams, the agents are there, they meet as it's on their schedule to meet with these teams and these agents every day. They're getting questioned by the press at availability every afternoon. There just grows a sense of momentum where things can develop faster. That really is what it is. And Alderson was always big on, and this is part of his personality, was like, well, what you're saying, I don't care if I'm here or I'm there. I'm going to make the move when the move is right.
Right.
And I don't think Brody is certainly not going to make a move to win the day at the winter meetings. That's not his deal. But it just encourages things. He will be able to have face-to-face conversations about Syndergaard with the teams that are interested in his suite or their suite. And, of course, as a human nature, that's going to facilitate things faster.
I'm trying to think of a way to describe it. It's like finding yourself at a store, knowing you can order those things online all the time.
But because that's a great analogy.
But because you're there, you're like, I might as well buy it here.
That's exactly what it is. That's right. And that's what gives it momentum. And there'll be almost certainly non-Mets, very fascinating storyline that this is where Bryce Harper lives, by the way. So that's another thing about these winter meetings being in Las Vegas, and teams will be either going off site to meet with him or he may traipse through the lobby, which will be a huge deal. And that will be a huge thing. And I would not be shocked if they want to execute a Harper press conference in Vegas when he decides if they can pull that off.
I love this offseason so much.
Yeah, Machado too.
Machado and Bryce Harper are still out there. Zach Greinke, Paul Goldschmidt probably going to get traded. Noah Syndergaard might get traded. There's a lot there.
Baseball's gone buck nutty.
In this edition of My Saturday Night, I'm going to give you...
Are we there already?
Well, I want to give you the option of either looking back at what you did on Saturday night, if it was exciting. I have a feeling it wasn't.
I saw a movie.
Okay. Or preview tonight's Wednesday night action, which is the SNY holiday party, which is always a lot of fun.
I predict that I will have two drinks, an hors d'oeuvre or two, and then we will rush back here because the stinking Mets did something. Go online.
Will you be up front with the audience at home if you are on the air breaking a story with two drinks in you?
Is there a need to be? Am I up front with the police when they pull me over and I have two drinks in me?
This is veered out of control. You should be. I just want to make that known for the
officer.
Record. I think I'm going to go right into the holiday party car bomb.
For real?
No.
That's not you.
That's not a Doug Williams.
I taught Chris Carlin the car bomb when he was like 43 years old or whatever the hell he is.
Wow.
And I'm proud of myself.
He's been, actually, every time I see him now, he does a car bomb.
Even for you, for
I've
lunch.
Seen him at SNY for basically.
I ruined his life.
Well, we'll let you know how the party went next week on Shay Anything. Of course, we're going to do a show. We haven't talked whether it's going to be Wednesday or Thursday or Tuesday.
I'll
or
probably
what day
call in like we did last time.
We'll have Andy call in from Vegas for the winter meetings. But thanks for joining us. As always, this has been the Shay Anything podcast. We love hearing from you on Twitter at MartinoNYC, at Doug Williams SNY. And please subscribe, rate, and review to the show if you haven't already. Thanks for listening. Have fun in Vegas.
I won't. I'll be working.
Okay. Well, could still be fun.